Hey ladies, it's Bridget Todd here. As women, we put our hearts into everything. May is High Blood Pressure Education Month, and it's time to focus on our heart health. Release the Pressure wants to help Black women look at self-care as an act of self-preservation. During High Blood Pressure Education Month, let's help get to our goal of 100,000 Black women putting their hearts first and learn more about their heart health. Visit iHeartRadio.com/RTP for a chance to receive a $1,000 gift card to take care of yourself and prioritize your heart health. That's iHeartRadio.com/RTP.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, "The more MQLs, the better," over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at Rails to Trails. One of my favorite conversations I've ever had on There Are No Girls on the Internet is with a writer who was targeted and harassed online about how she continues to stay safe while doing visible work on the internet. Without missing a beat, she said, "Anybody worried about online harassment should sign up for Delete Me." I signed up for Delete Me right then and there, and I personally recommend it to anyone. Sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. Now at a special discount for our listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/nogirls and use promo code NOGIRLS at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/nogirls and enter code NOGIRLS at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/nogirls, code NOGIRLS.
Just a heads up, this episode deals pretty heavily with sexual assault.
Because right now, my question to the Eastern District is, how many other sexual assault cases are sitting on your docket that you refuse to bring to trial? Why not call a grand jury? But they don't like to be asked questions. And I love to ask questions.
There Are No Girls on the Internet is a production of iHeartRadio and Unbossed Creative. I'm Bridget Todd, and this is There Are No Girls on the Internet.
So on the show, we talk a lot about how it's often marginalized people who make technology safer for everyone, and how it comes at a huge personal cost. But too often, we do not hear these stories. Last year, the rideshare app Lyft released a report on the number of people sexually assaulted in rideshares. Now, they didn't just do this out of concern for public safety. It was because of pressure generated by survivors. Survivors like Allison Turcos, who is suing both Lyft and the New York Police Department. On October 14, 2017, after a night out with friends, Allison hailed a Lyft to get back to her Brooklyn apartment. When she noticed the driver was taking her in the wrong direction, she thought maybe he was trying to scam her out of $20 or $30. She tried to hop out of the car at a red light, but realized the child locks were on. And when the driver pulled out a gun, she realized this wasn't just a scam. The Lyft driver brought her across state lines from New York to New Jersey, where he held her at gunpoint, raped her, and stood by as two other men did too. It was the worst night of her life.
What was your life like before October 14th, 2017?
I always describe October 14th, 2017 as the before times. My best friend Morgan and I, that's sort of how we, even thinking about this, like I get emotional. Morgan and I always describe it as the before times, particularly because I was with her October 13th, which was a Thursday. And there's this photo of us at this restaurant that our friend Rebecca took in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. And Morgan and I are just like radiating joy and love, and we're holding each other. And usually on the anniversary in October, every single year, both of us will share that on social media and just really hold space for what we refer to as the before times. So before October 14th of 2017, I'm pausing because I want to say that I was a more joyful person, not to say that I don't have the ability to experience joy in this moment in my life. And you can like hear my voice quivering. And I think just because like, I think the way that I want to answer this is the idea that like, I mourn the person that I was in October I mourn for the person that I was in October 2017, because when a person experiences any type of violence, but I think particularly for those of us who experience rape and sexual assault or the spectrum of harm, the person that we were going to become ceases to exist. And so in 2017, I had like incredible career aspirations. I thought that I wanted to be an executive director of a nonprofit. I, you know, was casually dating a person and was in an intimate relationship. I was having sex. I was really open to pleasure. I had a dramatically different relationship with my body. And you know, I was someone who really moved through the world freely. You know, I was someone who was not consumed with lawsuits and navigating the criminal legal system. And, you know, so right before talking to you, I was having a Zoom date with one of my best friends, Kate. And, you know, every single time that I check in with one of my friends now, so often, you know, they ask me questions like, have you talked to the FBI recently? Have you talked to your lawyers? Have you talked to federal prosecutors? In 2017, those were not questions that anyone was asking me. And so I think my life was just so much more carefree, and I wasn't carrying the weight. You know, I was a survivor. The first time that I was sexually assaulted, I was 16. And the second time that I was sexually assaulted, I was 18. And so in October 2017, I carried the weight of being a survivor, but was really starting to unpack that identity. And I think it just, when I think about that time, and I'm, you know, working through this in therapy, it's just, I just mourn for myself, because I think about like, what would it look like if this hadn't happened? And what would it look, what would my friendships look like? What would my potential romantic relationships look like? What would my relationship with my family look like, because my relationship with my family has been incredibly impacted by this. My relationships with my friends has been impacted. And so I think it's just the idea of, I really just try to practice so much compassion and grace and patience for myself, and to always hold space for the fact that, I was a different person before I got into a car in October of 2017, and something incredibly traumatic happened. And it's okay, because that's what violence does to a person. And the way that I really talk about it often, or think about it often, is that like when a bomb goes off inside of a room, those walls fall back, and you know, a house might crumble, or, you know, the structure, that scaffolding might be left. But when a person's body experiences violence, or particularly when what happened to me, you know, I have no physical scars. My body is still intact. And it's really hard because sometimes you might look at me and you might think she's fine. Or, you know, I might meet people today and they will have no idea. Unless they Google me or I decide to disclose what happened to me, they would just think that I'm a quote unquote like normal 33-year-old woman who was living her best life. And I just think that unless, you know, someone knows my story, you know, the amount of violence that I have experienced in my life, particularly in the year of 2017, like how much violence can a body withstand? And I think myself and many other survivors and victims can say, you know, sometimes our bodies know no bounds because we are able, you know, it's why we identify as survivors.
If you're in a room with five women, statistically, one of them has survived an attempted sexual assault or rape. There are so many of us. Some who speak openly about their experiences and others who don't.
That was something that really helped put things in sharper focus for me. How many of us are out there and that you would just think, this is someone living their best life. This is a carefree, joyful human in the world. But we're all carrying these stories with us. It's so many of us. And I think when you really contend with the scope of how many people are out there that are survivors and that you would never know, it makes me, on the one hand, enraged, like, how much can a body take? But on the other hand, I'm like, we are an army. It's all of us. It's so many of us. We are an army.
In 2011, I helped to organize the Slut Walk in New York City. And I organized that as an ally. I did not identify as a survivor. And I was doing a lot of work to dismantle rape culture, but was so distanced from the sexual assault that I had experienced in high school and the sexual assault that I had experienced 4 years earlier in college. And was like marching in the streets, screaming about, you know, that no matter what you wear, it does not mean that you should, you know, that you are welcoming sexual assault, et cetera. And that if you decide to report to the police, police should no matter what, but be treating you with dignity and respect and trust. And it wasn't until like early fall of 2017 that I really started to, with the help of an incredible therapist, realize that like deeply, deeply down in the depth of my brain and my body, because as we all know, the body keeps score, that I had experienced sexual assault earlier in my life and had just, you know, was sort of like, this is over here and I'm not going to touch it. And the thing that I think about is that, you know, survivors look like your best friend. They look like your mom. They look like your brother, you know, your boss, you know, the elected official sitting next to you. And the thing that I think about so often is that, you know, survivors never owe you a disclosure. And I think that in a lot of the organizing work that I do, this is really important to me to always remember is that we don't owe you our stories. And that, you know, given the rates of sexual abuse in this country, in the world globally, and how underreported we know that sexual assault and rape is, that you very often should assume that you are holding space and community with a survivor. And so when you, you know, you could be at a dinner party, you could be at, you know, your child's school at a school board meeting and talking about, you know, everything from dress code to, you know, like what does sexual assault reporting look like to even in your workplace and talking about workplace harassment. And you should always be operating under the assumption that there is a survivor sitting next to you or that the person in power is a survivor. No matter, in my opinion, how they might be, the words that they might be choosing to use, because sometimes, as we know, trauma responses can get the best of us. But just the idea that just because someone has never told you verbatim that they are a survivor of sexual assault or harassment or rape does not mean that that is an experience that they have had.
I am here today not because I want to be. I am terrified. I am here because I believe it is my civic duty to tell you what happened to me while Brett Kavanaugh and I were in high school.
During the confirmation hearing of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh back in 2018, Christine Blasey Ford testified that Kavanaugh raped her when they were in high school. Her story was powerful,
and she talked about the personal cost to both her and her family in speaking up about it. But in the end, Kavanaugh was still confirmed. We live in a world that asks survivors to recount the stories of their trauma and their pain over and over and over again to get justice, whatever that even looks like. After Allison was raped, she reported what happened to the police and to Lyft.
Something that I feel like we tell survivors is that if you tell your story again and again and again in the right ways to the right people, that is the way that you can sort of get justice. And we sort of say that with kind of a, I guess, callous disregard for the fact that what we're really telling people is like, relive your trauma over and over and over again. And that is a pathway to get justice. In your case, you have done that. I can only imagine what it has been like to relive this painful, traumatic experience over and over again, but then not get any kind of satisfying outcome, not get any kind of even just a reply back to an email. What has that been like for you?
Excellent question. I think one of the things that I, upon like deep reflection, every single time that I think about, you know, why I chose to report and the reporting process. You know, in high school, I didn't tell anyone. I didn't tell my parents. I didn't tell friends. In college, same thing. My rapist in college was on an athletic team. And so I was sort of operating under the assumption that because he was in a position of power on campus and he would be more likely to be believed. And so then in 2017, because I had had some significant memory loss and, you know, I thought, and I sort of emphasize that because I was really, there was an assumption that, you know, because this was a Lyft driver and because I had a copy of the map and because I had a photo of him and because I had his taxi limo commission license number, because in New York City, in order to drive a ride share, Uber or Lyft, you have to be licensed with the TLC commission. And I had his license plate number. And so because I had all of that information and a map of our ride that I was literally handing the New York Police Department Special Victims Division, like an open and close case is an assumption that I was making. And, you know, when I made the difficult decision to have a rape kit done, which I had never done before, you know, and we later found out that there was DNA in my kit. Once again, I was sort of operating under the assumption that like this was going to be easy. I'm not a police officer, nor have I ever, you know, investigated a case, but I just thought that this would be relatively easy. And then, you know, less than a month in, what I started to realize was that it was going to become my second full-time job to hold this particular detective. Her name was Maria Quiñones, out of the New York, Brooklyn Special Victims Division, to respond to an email, to return a phone call, to, you know, like, should I? And then it became one of those moments of, you know, like, if I text her, is that me bothering her? And so then should I not text her? Should I only email her? If I call her too many times, is she going to get annoyed with me? And the idea of like the like brain games that as a rape victim, mere weeks after my sexual assault and kidnapping, that I had to play in order to like get my detective to like me enough to have to respond to me is just horrifying. And then as weeks went on and she would do things like withhold certain info, like we got the results of my rape kit in December of 2017, and she would tell me certain information, but not tell me all information. And would withhold certain information. And then I would think, you know, like, okay, so I need to act a certain way in order for her to tell me certain things. And in March of 2018, we had a meeting on March 18th of 2018. And that was when she had disclosed the majority of my rape kit results, which had disclosed that there were multiple semen samples found in my rape kit, which had then alerted us to the fact that it was a gang rape and that there were multiple perpetrators who had assaulted me that night. And I started to cry. I started to show an emotion because I did not at that point in time remember the assault, but I was getting information and I did not have a memory to attach to that gang rape. And the special victims detective said, "This is clearly making you upset. It seems like I shouldn't tell you things about your case because I don't want to upset you." And so then what that signified to me as a victim was never show emotion to law enforcement. Because if you show emotion to law enforcement, then they're going to withhold vital information to you about your case. And so now, 4 years later, I have a very difficult time showing emotion. I'm like still working on this in therapy and still working on this with my friends. Because if I show emotion, then I think that people either won't believe me. I think that people will find me to be difficult. And I think that people will never give me information that I believe is my right.
Let's take a quick break. Hey, ladies, it's Bridget Todd here. May is High Blood Pressure Education Month. It is crucial for us, especially as Black women, to focus on our heart health. We pour our heart and soul into every aspect of our lives, but often our own health takes a back seat. That's where Release the Pressure comes in. It's all about us, Black women, seeing self-care as an essential act of self-preservation. Whether it's for yourself, your family, or your community, your health is invaluable. Let's help get to our goal of 100,000 Black women putting their hearts first and learn more about their heart health. Here's how you can join in. Head to iHeartRadio.com/RTP for a chance to receive a $1,000 gift card to take care of yourself and prioritize your heart health. Let's make our health a priority. Visit iHeartRadio.com/RTP today. Together, we can make a difference in our health and our lives. Join us and let's take care of our hearts together. Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at Rails to Trails. Y'all know I love the internet, but a sad truth about it is that it can be a scary place, especially for women, people of color, and trans folks. We've talked to people on this podcast, whistleblowers, activists, and advocates who are making technology safer, who then become targets for doing that work. But the truth is, it can happen to any of us online. That's why I personally use and recommend DeleteMe. DeleteMe finds and removes any personal information you don't want online and makes sure it stays off. Sign up and provide DeleteMe with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for DeleteMe, now at a special discount for our listeners. Today, get 20% off your DeleteMe plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/nogirls and use promo code NOGIRLS at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/nogirls and enter code NOGIRLS at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/nogirls, code NOGIRLS. So in 2024, one of my goals is to finally get serious about my finances. It's been kind of a big emotional thing for me. Thinking about money historically has caused me a lot of anxiety and stress because I have a lot of trauma related to money. And if you can relate, if that sounds like you, check out Fearless Finance. Fearless Finance provides on-demand, comprehensive financial planning by the hour. It's a new way to get financial advice without all the headaches, high fees, and commitments that come with traditional financial advisors. Fearless Finance planners don't sell anything. No used car salesman vibe here. And that means no concerns about being sold something just for the commission that it earns a rep. Their planners meet you where you are on your financial journey. No judgment, whether you're looking to buy a house, optimize your savings, or just want to make sure your finances are okay. They can answer your questions and help you achieve your goals. No question is too small, no problem is too big. Fearless Finance is making financial advice more affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually, and they charge by the hour. Visit fearlessfinance.com today to get started. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit. And you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use code GIRLS. And we're back. In 2006, sexual assault survivor Tarana Burke started the Me Too movement to lift up survivors of sexual assault. And on October 15th, 2017, just a day after Allison's attack, actor Alyssa Milano posted on Twitter, "If all the women who have been sexually harassed or assaulted wrote Me Too as a status, we might give people a sense of the magnitude of the problem." This call to action took off,
with millions of people using the hashtag to share their stories online, and led to the arrests of high-profile abusers like Harvey Weinstein. And it was against this backdrop that the complexities of reporting sexual assault played out in real time for Allison.
In April of 2018, the New York Police Department Special Victims Division, and along with a couple of advocates in the city, had an open forum in a Williamsburg hotel. I can't remember if it was the Wythe Hotel or where it was. And it was on a Thursday night, and it was my last session. I was in a rape survivor group therapy, in a survivor support group. And I literally jumped in a cab from the financial district and took it to Williamsburg and walked in like an hour late to this forum. And Paul Saraceno, who was the deputy inspector of special victims at the time, stood up and said to the group and basically said, you know, like, the New York Special Victims Division is here. We are here for rape victims. We have all the resources. We want you to report. The thing I think that is important is that in October of 2017, the Harvey Weinstein news had just broke. And so my story is parallel to the resurgence of Tarana Burke's Me Too movement. And so, like, the day that I was getting a rape kit done, October 16th of 2017, is when Alyssa Milano was literally using the hashtag, Tarana Burke's hashtag, Me Too. And so as this is happening and the world is breaking open with people's stories, I'm living that in real time. And so in April of 2017, when this is happening, Paul Saraceno is on a mic and is saying, like, the New York Police Department is ready. Like, come, we are ready for you. And they were open, the public was allowed to ask questions. And I wrote anonymously on a index card and I submitted it. And Emily Gallagher, who at that point in time was running the Greenpoint sexual assault advocacy organization, she's now an elected official, thank you. Emily Gallagher read it. And she said, this is from an audience member, and she read it verbatim. And the card said, I have an open and active case with Brooklyn Special Victims. And I don't understand how you can stand in front of us and tell us that you are ready, you know, to meet us with resources when I can't even get my detective to answer a fucking email or answer my phone call. And the audience, like, was silent for maybe like 2 seconds. And then just, like, you could hear them all take a deep breath. And then they just started to clap. And Paul Saraceno, who's a deputy inspector with the New York Police Department, didn't know what to do and basically was like, come find me afterwards. I want to talk to you. And I was like, okay, this is the next step of me doing another job. And I approached him and I said, I'm not ready to tell you my name. I'm not ready to tell you my detective's name. Like, I think I know what this is going to look like, but I'm not there yet. And he gave me his card. And then 2 days later, I emailed him and I was on the phone with him for 45 minutes and I filed an official complaint against Maria Quiñones. And then 2 days later, my case was transferred. And then I filed a complaint with the Civilian Complaint Review Board. And then they came back and said that they were going to put a more efficient detective on my case, which at that point in time, they already had. I did not find that to be efficient. And as if there had been, because, I mean, again, this is incredibly long-winded, but, like, Maria Quiñones had lost video evidence. So, like, a part of my case is that I was kidnapped from Brooklyn to New Jersey. That involves going through the Holland Tunnel. New York City is a police state. There is surveillance everywhere, right? And so, like, there is video evidence of me in the Holland Tunnel in the back of this man's car. There is police evidence, or there's video evidence of me in Liberty State Park, which is a New Jersey state park. There's video evidence of me there. Maria Quiñones neglected to do her job and lost video evidence. And a slew of other things that, you know, were done. And so I filed a Civilian Complaint Review Board, a complaint with the CCRB, and did not feel that they had done a satisfactory investigation. I then elevated that to the IAB, the Internal Affairs Bureau. I did not feel that they had done a satisfactory investigation, again, because how can police hold themselves accountable? And then I went to the Department of Investigation. And I filed a complaint against her with the DOI. And then finally, once I felt that DOI had not done a proper investigation, because again, how can police hold themselves accountable or investigate themselves? I then made the decision to file a lawsuit against the NYPD.
So why did you file that lawsuit?
The reason why I wanted to file that lawsuit was because I am a white, cis, queer, but straight passing woman. And when I stand up in a room and say to Paul Saraceno, or when I stand up anywhere at a press conference, on this podcast, anywhere, and I say, fuck cops, my anger is going to be valid. Because when I say those things, no one is going to take into account the color of my skin. I'm not going to fall into an angry Black woman trope. The way that I was treated when I reported, I carry all of the privileges in the world. And the amount of time and energy and mental capacity and emotional capacity that it took for me to fight and to hold the NYPD accountable is not possible for a single mother with two children who's working multiple jobs. Is not possible for someone who is a sex worker and was sexually assaulted by a client of theirs. And I'm not going to say that it's not possible that they don't have the capacity to do that, but like the system is not meant for us as survivors. The system is meant to exhaust us out of existence. And I decided to literally say, go fuck yourself and watch me. Like, try me, please. Because at every single turn, whatever you want to do, pile it the fuck on. Because there are so many people behind me who do not have the support system, because my friends are amazing, who do not have the time. At that point in time, I was gainfully employed and I had a flexible work schedule. So I could try to file a FOIL for what's called my DD-5, which is your case file. And I could figure out how to navigate the system, which is literally impossible. And the final option was like, fuck it, I'm going to file a lawsuit. I want to see every single thing, every single decision-making process, how you decided to put her in a position of power, all of these things, show me. And so I filed a lawsuit on January 31st of 2019, because I was like, we deserve better. And if this is how you're treating a college-educated white woman, how the fuck are you treating marginalized communities, folks who don't speak English, undocumented folks, sex workers, trans women of color? So I'm going to spend my privilege and do everything that I can. Because while I do not believe for everyone that reporting to the police or involving police in your, you know, in your sexual assault experience might not be the best option, and I understand that. But for some people, going to the police is going to be something that they want. And if that's what a survivor wants to do, I want them to be treated with nothing but dignity and respect and trust. I want them to walk into a police precinct and to be believed.
The entire process has been dehumanizing and disrespectful. For instance, after her assault, Lyft even charged Allison for the ride. In an open letter to the federal prosecutors who declined to take up her case, Allison recounts that they asked questions like, why was she comfortable recounting her gang rape? And they asked what, quote, sexual positions she recalled. There are no sexual positions in a rape, she wrote. It's an assault. It is brutal. It is penetration by force. It is not sex. Allison continues to fight. She's suing Lyft and the New York Police Department. And she isn't just fighting for herself. She's fighting to make systemic changes so people who are more marginalized than she is can expect better. With everything they've put you through, how do you find the strength to keep fighting?
The question that I honestly like ask myself like every single day or multiple times a day is like, who do these broken systems benefit? Because, you know, like how many times I have been in the streets in front of the Supreme Court, in front of, you know, the Supreme Court in DC or in Brooklyn or anywhere. And, you know, during a lot of like NYPD protests, especially like last summer during a lot of the BLM protests, you know, is the question always like, who do you protect and who do you serve? And like, that's a question that I literally have like a post-it on my desk and it just says that. Because the system, and I literally mean like any system, will always tell you that they have, you know, like we serve X community, you know, we're here to protect X, we are here, et cetera. And that is bullshit. And they are always here. I think about it sort of like in HR in any, you know, company or office space. It's like HR is not there to protect the workers. HR is there to protect the company. And the police are there to protect themselves Police unions are some of the most powerful unions in the country, and they are there to protect themselves. And for me, it's just the idea of, like, it took me a while to get here, but it was when I changed my thinking from being an individual and thinking about, like, this happened to me. This, I am an individual, this happened to me, and flipping that and thinking about this in terms of systems. And thinking about the fact, and I acknowledge that, like, there are community organizers, there are, like, Black folks and organizers who have been doing this and thinking about this for years. And a lot of that, like, systemic work came from, like, folks of color, Black folks in my life who had been doing that for years, especially, like, a lot of my work started in the abortion rights world. And so in the idea of, like, you know, I can't think of, like, where I learned this, but the term of, like, a right doesn't mean shit if you can't access it. Your right to abortion does not mean jack shit if you cannot access an abortion. And so, like, that was one of the first times that I ever thought about something systemically. And so then it was just the idea of, like, when it came to me attempting to do this work and thinking about, okay, so, like, I walked in to a hospital. I guess it really started, like, when I contacted Lyft that later that night. And, you know, the only thing that I could do was, like, open an app and, like, file a written complaint. And then, like, a couple minutes later, I was like, well, I've had vaginal bleeding and discomfort, and I'm looking at this map, and I was taken to an entirely different borough and state. So none of those things sit right with me. So I'm going to call their, like, internal 911 customer service. And this person on the phone is just like, okay, well, we will refund you, like, $93.11 or whatever, but we're still going to charge you $12.81 because that's what the ride from Crown Heights to Williamsburg would have been. That was the original ride, Crown Heights, Brooklyn to Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And in that moment, I was like, okay, sure. Because I guess in reality, like, I did get picked up in Crown Heights and I did go home to Williamsburg, but there was just, like, you know, 80 minutes of, you know, ride in between and 22 minutes of a stop in a park. But sure, Lyft, you go ahead and you make that profit. Got it. Sure. And then, you know, on Monday morning, on the 16th of October in 2017, when I walked into a hospital and, you know, had a rape kit done and, you know, talked to four beat cops and then had to carry my own rape kit because the cop forgot it on the chair in the room and I grabbed it and then had a police escort outside of the hospital, walking out of the hospital with my best friend, Morgan. And we're standing outside of a marked police car and Morgan and I get put into a marked police car as if we are criminals. And then my rape kit sits shotgun while we ride to the Brooklyn Special Victims Division in Prospect Heights and then talk to this detective. And it's just, you know, when I think about it now, I just think of, like, it's very sad when I say this, but, like, this happens on a daily basis. There are so many victims that this happens to. Like, I was just looking at the crime stats that New York City put out. And I think it's 1,241 rapes have been reported in New York City so far this year. And so that's 1,241 people who have reported to the NYPD so far. And so then when you think about it in terms like that, and, like, a couple weeks later, I got a bill for my rape kit. And so it's just the idea of, like, the system is not seeing you as a person. They don't see you as a three-dimensional human. They don't see you as someone who, like, has to pay your bills, has to raise your kids, has to exist in the world. It's just, like, churning you through. And so when I think about it in terms of the idea of, like, I am not alone. This happened to me, but I am not alone. And in order for there to be, like, true change, it doesn't matter that, like, I called my credit card company and then they had to contact Lyft and, like, get that refund. And I had a fight with Eric Schneiderman, who at that point in time was the attorney general and, like, a garbage human and a serial perpetrator of abuse, to get refunded for my rape kit. But, like, if I bang on that door and, like, make my voice heard and, like, do not shut the fuck up, the next time that someone in billing sees this code, whatever the code is, XXXYYY, whatever it is for a rape kit, it's going to be flagged. because they're going to be like, that motherfucking asshole, Allison Turcos. Like, okay. We don't need another person coming here and banging on our door. Okay. Nope. Okay. Flag. No one's ever getting billed for a rape kit from New York Presbyterian ever again. Got it. And I think for me, it's like, that's where my strength comes from, is the idea of like, I just think that like the system is fucked beyond reason. And if we can just start to make like what I refer to as like relentless incrementalism, like I want to bulldoze everything. I want to like burn it to the ground, but like, it's not always possible. So I think it's that like really reframing my mind to think about it in terms of systems. And then I think the other thing is like, I literally could cry thinking about it. I have an incredible, incredible group of friends. Literally just talking about it makes me, does it make me sad? I would not be able to do this work without the community that I have. My best friend Morgan was with me the day that I reported and held my hand while I had a kit done. And our relationship has really struggled and fractured at points. But we have come back together and are even stronger now, which I think is like radical honesty and transparency really got us there. And just the idea that like trauma is hard and what it does to people is hard. And I went through a phase that I call like my trauma monster phase, where I was not kind to myself and to my community. And my community really practiced a lot of grace and compassion and patience with me. And friends who just like understand that it is impossible. It's impossible to take on the largest police force in the country sometimes. It is impossible to take on a $1 billion tech company, like Lyft hired private investigators and who like stood outside my apartment and like would photograph me. And that's hard, you know, like it's impossible to be told by the FBI to grow out your hair because you will be more believable if and when your case goes to trial. And that's hard. But my friends are just so patient and so supportive. And so that's another place that I really get my strength from.
I'm so glad you have this community of supportive people to pour into you and lift you up. God knows you deserve it. And I'm so happy that you have that. My heart goes out to folks who don't feel like they have that, but my God, I'm so happy that you do.
Yeah. And to piggyback off of that, it's one of the reasons why if I see someone on Twitter who shares their story, I will DM them immediately. I don't know them. They are a stranger. But because I am so, like, truly so grateful, I love the term pouring into, because I am so grateful to have that community, and I know that I would not be where I am today without it, if I see folks who are sharing their story publicly or, like, alluding to sharing their story, or if people in my community, like, I will get a text from, you know, friends or mutual friends, and they'll say, hey, like, I know this person, Jane Doe, and she is experiencing sexual harassment, or like she's gonna report and she's about to walk into a police station and she doesn't know what to do. And so now, you know, I am always wanting to pay it forward because I cannot fathom what it would be like to do this alone, to report alone, to be a plaintiff in a lawsuit alone, to tell friends and family, like to have to like navigate anything and to not have support. And so that's one of the reasons why I'm like very open. And I say like, my DMs are open there, you know, on my website, there is like a contact me page and like, I will respond and just anything. I will jump on the phone with you. We can get on a Zoom, you know, anything that I can do, because I truly, truly, truly would never want someone to feel alone. And being a survivor of sexual assault can feel so lonely and so isolating.
More after a quick break. Hey, ladies, it's Bridget Todd here. May is High Blood Pressure Education Month. It is crucial for us, especially as Black women, to focus on our heart health. We pour our heart and soul into every aspect of our lives, but often our own health takes a backseat. That's where Release the Pressure comes in. It's all about us, Black women, seeing self-care as an essential act of self-preservation. Whether it's for yourself, your family, or your community, your health is invaluable. Let's help get to our goal of 100,000 Black women putting their hearts first and learn more about their heart health. Here's how you can join in. Head to iHeartRadio.com/RTP for a chance to receive a $1,000 gift card to take care of yourself and prioritize your heart health. Let's make our health a priority. Visit iHeartRadio.com/RTP today. Together, we can make a difference in our health and our lives. Join us and let's take care of our hearts together. Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at Rails to Trails. So in 2024, one of my goals is to finally get serious about my finances. It's been kind of a big emotional thing for me. Thinking about money historically has caused me a lot of anxiety and stress because I have a lot of trauma related to money. And if you can relate, if that sounds like you, check out Fearless Finance. Fearless Finance provides on-demand, comprehensive financial planning by the hour. It's a new way to get financial advice without all the headaches, high fees, and commitments that come with traditional financial advisors. Fearless Finance planners don't sell anything. No used car salesman vibe here. And that means no concerns about being sold something just for the commission that it earns a rep. Their planners meet you where you are on your financial journey. No judgment, whether you're looking to buy a house, optimize your savings, or just want to make sure your finances are okay. They can answer your questions and help you achieve your goals. No question is too small. No problem is too big. Fearless Finance is making financial advice more affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually, and they charge by the hour. Visit fearlessfinance.com today to get started. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit. And you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use code GIRLS.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Let's get right back into it. As of right now, federal attorneys have not taken up Allison's case. And no charges have been filed against anyone for what happened to her. And she believes it has a lot to do with being a, quote, difficult victim.
So to this day, the state's attorney, they have just declined to take up your case. Have they given you any kind of clear reasoning why that is?
No. And so not even the state's attorney. It's a federal attorney. Things that I only am slowly starting to learn. Because when you kidnap someone across state lines, it becomes an automatic federal offense. And so for my case was originally with the Southern District of New York. They declined to prosecute. It was then moved to the Eastern District of New York, which is where it's currently sitting. And federal prosecutors, it's been with federal prosecutors for over 2 years now. And I think they have not given me a direct answer. And their sort of talking point and line item is that, you know, they are, quote, actively investigating it. I don't know what more you need to actively investigate. And I think for me, the way that I see it is that, you know, I am in their mind, a quote unquote, difficult victim. I speak really openly about the perfect victim narrative. I speak really openly, case in point, what I'm doing today. Like, I speak really openly about what it's like to navigate the system. I speak really openly about, you know, misconduct by the New York Police Department. And I speak about, you know, my struggles of, you know, what does justice look like? Do I want, is my, you know, quote unquote desired outcome of reporting is my perpetrators being in prison? You know, can you be a, you know, prison abolitionist? Can you do, you know, transformative and restorative justice work and also be a victim and a witness in a federal crime? Can you hold all of those hard things and all of those truths at once? And I think I also am someone who sort of like laughs in the face of power. it's a privilege that I hold, but I'm like, great, you're a federal prosecutor. I don't know why you think that makes you better than me. Federal prosecutors don't really like that. Ask me how many fucks I give. And I think that they are used to victims who will sit across the table from them and being like, I'm so grateful to you. Thank you so much. Whereas I will sit across the table from them and be like, you're doing your job. No one applauds for me when I do my job. And I think it's the idea of like, I believe and envision and work towards a world where, shout out Sabrina Hersey Issa, survivors are leaders. Our survivorship is what makes us leaders. And we are not charity cases. We are not numbers for your end of year report. Like, we are the people at the center of everything, including if we decide to file criminal charges. Like, we are the ones who get to decide things. Fine. The Constitution is a thing. I get it. Like, it's important. But like, it was founded on white supremacy and we should just abolish that shit right now. And so to me, it's just the idea of like, federal prosecutors should be open and honest and transparent and not gatekeep information about our cases from us. We should not be like wandering around our apartments and wondering like, what's the status of my case? Who are the detectives on my case? What is the statute of limitations and when is it going to run out? Like, I wonder, like, am I going to have to write a victim impact statement one day? What is the likelihood of me going to trial? Like, all of these questions survivors should be empowered with. Because we are most often, particularly in sexual assault, we are the only victims and witnesses to the crime. And yet we are treated and diminished so deeply within the system that by the end of it, we're like, fuck this noise. I don't want to do anything. And I think federal prosecutors are really expecting me one day to contact them and to be like, I've had enough. I'm too impatient. I can't wait. We're like, every single 3 months, I'm going to email them and be like, hey, what's up? What are we doing? Want to jump on the phone? Do you want to tell me what's happening? I don't, you know, like, are you like, what are the key performance indicators of being a federal prosecutor? Because right now, my question to the Eastern District is how many other sexual assault cases are sitting on your docket that you refuse to bring to trial? Why not call a grand jury? But they don't like to be asked questions. And I love to ask questions.
I mean, that's something else that I am so taken by in terms of your story is how many different systems you are asking the hard questions of. Hospital systems, the NYPD, you know, Lyft, like you're actively suing Lyft right now. Like, what does it feel like to be hammering to get any kind of accountability from all of these different, very powerful, very politically connected, very savvy, very moneyed systems all at once as one person?
Yeah, that's an incredible question, and I appreciate you asking it. I think the question that I just always want to ask is like, what is power? Who has it? What is hard power? What is soft power? I'm always interrogating like capitalism. Let's look into it. You know, and I think I really love to ask like generative questions. And so the idea of asking, you know, folks at Lyft and, you know, particularly the like folks on the board at Lyft, case in point, Valerie Jarrett, came from the Obama White House, really invested, and I put air quotes, invested. And I'm not questioning her morals, but like really invested in, you know, work around women and girls and gender-based violence, sits on the board of Lyft, has remained silent for years as they have come under fire and as we have all filed lawsuits. And for me, it's just the idea of like, can you help me understand what's happening on the inside? Can you help me understand like how you can hold these many truths at once? And I think it's the idea of You know, oftentimes people will say, you know, like Alison Turcos is, you know, she's critiquing or she's bulldozing or she just wants to like burn everything to the ground. And the thing is like Lyft has the opportunity to do incredible work. And they are, you know, people use Lyft to get to and from, you know, like, I'm sure that like people on their way to have babies are just like ordering a Lyft and getting to, you know, the hospital. They're, you know, taking Lyft, you know, to have their abortions. They're taking Lyft, you know, I'm not trying to abolish Lyft by any way, shape or form. I'm just wanting to ensure that when you get into a Lyft, that people on both sides, both like the workers and the drivers are, you know, have access to a livable wage and benefits. And so like, that's something that I'm trying to cognizantly be really thoughtful about. And also that if and when someone reports a sexual assault to Lyft, how are they being treated? Because when I reported mine and my last communication with Lyft was, I'm thinking about filing a police report. What does this look like in collaboration with your company? And I sent that on Sunday, October 15th, around 7 p.m. my time, and Lyft ghosted me. And I was like, hey, dude, what do I do? Like, do you want to file this report? How do I do this? Let's work together. At that point in my life, I was like, let's work together. This billion-dollar tech company, the police, again, I've grown self-growth a lot since then. And Lyft could not fucking respond. And refuse to respond because they're like, we're not going to do this. But yet now publicly, they're like, we will always, you know, work with law enforcement. We're going to do great things. And I think it's just the idea that I'm not, again, this comes from an incredible place of privilege to say this. I'm not afraid because what do I have to lose? Like, what is Lyft going to do to me? Like, do you want to take my life savings? Great. It's not that much or really anything. Like, do you want to take like my dignity? There's not like, I've been sexually assaulted 3 times and the most recent one was a gang rape. Like what dignity do you think that I have? And it's just the idea of like, what, I don't have anything left to give you. Because when, in my opinion, I'm going to speak from an I space, I don't want to generalize, like as a victim of sexual assault, as a victim of an aggravated kidnapping, of a kidnapping at gunpoint, like the things that my perpetrators have said to me, the things that people who have perpetrated violence against me, the things that people on the internet, again, don't read the comments, but like will come in and say like, you made this up. This isn't true. You're trying to get attention, whatever. If leadership at Lyft or board members or shareholders or anyone want to push back against me, my question is like, who do you protect and who do you serve? What do you want your legacy to be? Because I would think that you would want your legacy to be at an organization like we helped people get from place A to place B. We're helping transportation to be safer. We're helping to do these things. And not during my time on the board, we were sued by thousands of women.
More after a quick break. Hey, ladies, it's Bridget Todd here. May is High Blood Pressure Education Month. It is crucial for us, especially as Black women, to focus on our heart health. We pour our heart and soul into every aspect of our lives, but often our own health takes a back seat. That's where Release the Pressure comes in. It's all about us, Black women, seeing self-care as an essential act of self-preservation. Whether it's for yourself, your family, or your community, your health is invaluable. Let's help get to our goal of 100,000 Black women putting their hearts first and learn more about their heart health. Here's how you can join in. Head to iHeartRadio.com/RTP for a chance to receive a $1,000 gift card to take care of yourself and prioritize your heart health. Let's make our health a priority. Visit iHeartRadio.com/RTP today. Together, we can make a difference in our health and our lives. Join us and let's take care of our hearts together. Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at @RailsToTrails. So in 2024, one of my goals is to finally get serious about my finances. It's been kind of a big emotional thing for me. Thinking about money historically has caused me a lot of anxiety and stress because I have a lot of trauma related to money. And if you can relate, if that sounds like you, check out Fearless Finance. Fearless Finance provides on-demand, comprehensive financial planning by the hour. It's a new way to get financial advice without all the headaches, high fees, and commitments that come with traditional financial advisors. Fearless Finance planners don't sell anything. No used car salesman vibe here. And that means no concerns about being sold something just for the commission that it earns a rep. Their planners meet you where you are on your financial journey. No judgment, whether you're looking to buy a house, optimize your savings, or just want to make sure your finances are okay. They can answer your questions and help you achieve your goals. No question is too small. No problem is too big. Fearless Finance is making financial advice more affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually, and they charge by the hour. Visit fearlessfinance.com today to get started. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit. And you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use code GIRLS.
Tired of hair removal tools that just don't cut it? Conair Girl Bomb gives you smooth, flawless results while putting you firmly in control. From achieving that silky smooth skin to boosting your inner confidence, Conair Girl Bomb is all about helping you elevate your self-care game. Whether it's creating a hype playlist, throwing yourself into a hobby, or scheduling some me time, self-care is important to keeping you feeling confident and empowered. It's time to take your hair removal routine to the next level. You can trust Conair Girl Bomb to get the job done right. Conair Girl Bomb gives you the secret weapons for achieving powerful results with ease. Designed with women in mind, these tools boast the Sassy Girl Bomb Grip for unparalleled handling and precision, along with professional-grade blades to deliver results that you used to only get from men's tools. No more compromising. So, to all you incredible women out there, treat yourself to a little Conair Girl Bomb magic. Don't settle for anything less than perfection. Elevate your grooming game with Conair Girl Bomb. Available now at ConairGirlBomb.com or a retailer near you.
Let's get right back into it.
In 2018, after an investigative piece about sexual assault by drivers pointed out that there was no publicly available data about assaults in rideshares, Lyft and Uber both promised to deliver a report on those numbers. Now, Uber actually did release their report the following year. Lyft didn't. And by the time they finally published their report showing that 4,158 reports of sexual assault by drivers and riders between the beginning of 2017 and the end of 2019, it was a full 3 years after the deadline they had set.
I hate that we live in this world where you, as someone who has already been through so much, been harmed, is doing this kind of unpaid, incredibly heavy, thankless work to make Lyft a safer platform for everybody, kind of like against their will. Like, you're doing this work of like dragging them, kicking and screaming to making their platform safer. And they're a billion-dollar tech company and you're just you. And I almost kind of can't wrap my head around it. And seeing Lyft's posture in public, like when they finally released their, you know, very late report on sexual assaults reported that happened in Lyft's, you know, being like, oh, well, you know, of course we want to have transparency and we care about safe riders. And it just kind of erased the fact that it was people like you, Allison, who had to force them to put this report out late, might I add. Like, it just erases, or I feel like it's an attempt to erase your voice and all that you've been through because it makes their company look like woke and good and helpful.
That's completely it. And I think also they will never, outside of what I assume is like in private Slack messages where, you know, I always like make a joke to my friends that I assume that, you know, if we did like a control F in their Slack messages for my name, it would just be, you know, a party. But I think Lyft will never, ever give credit where credit is due. And I don't need credit from Lyft. Like, that's not what I want, because the thing is that so much of the work that I do is just the idea of like, you know, it's not going to make my life better. You know, I don't file a lawsuit to make my life better, because I know, particularly, you know, in putting my name on a lawsuit and being public, I knew that it was, for me, an easy decision, because in putting a name and a face to my trauma. It was going to be harder for a $1 billion tech company to ignore me. But for so many other people, you know, being that public is not a decision, you know, it's not an easy decision. And I think it's just the idea that, like, you know, I'm suing them. They can't be like, oh, Allison Turcos, thank you so much for all this work that you've done. But I think it's the idea of, like, they can never acknowledge outside of saying, you know, we had 4,000 sexual assaults between 2017 and 2019, but they will never call that. They're going to always refer to them as safety incidents, which I think is, in my opinion, like, really diminishing. And it's really hard because, like, I get really emotional when I talk about the report because I worked so hard for that accountability. And yet it feels really hard to see, to have a company who at first told you that what happened to you didn't happen. Lyft at first told me that there was an error and that either the driver picked me up and dropped me off and then forgot to end the ride. So then he went to New Jersey on a second ride, which the map will clearly show that did not happen. And then when I told them that, they were like, well, it must be a glitch and you either didn't update your phone. So it's an iOS error. So then they tried to blame it on Apple. I have an iPhone. They tried to blame it on Apple. And then they said that, like, there must be some connectivity error. So they just attempted to really, like, gaslight me within 24 hours of being kidnapped, trafficked, sexually assaulted, and basically say, like, this didn't happen. And, like, documented. I have emails that say, like, Lyft saying, like, this never happened. This is a tech error on your end. And then fighting relentlessly to have them release a report. And then seeing a report come out on a late Thursday night, Friday morning, and seeing that one of those numbers from 2017, I am one of those numbers. And it goes back to the reason why, like, I will fight relentlessly is because it just goes to show, like, I am one of many. And, like, we have to fight, we are fighting against a behemoth of a system. And the idea for them to say that this is a safety report and that these are safety incidents, to me, and I've said this before and I will say it again, like, this is not a safety report. This is a harm report. They are reporting on harm and harm that they are actively complicit in and hiding. And yes, they could say, like, we're not hiding it. This is a transparency report, but it's not hiding in the sense that, like, if I had not filed my lawsuit, my number would not have been there. And so how many people have contacted Lyft either through a written complaint or a phone call? And then Lyft said to them, I don't think that happened. I think that what happened is that it's probably your iOS system has to be updated. Or, like, I'm really sorry that this happened to you. We're going to offer you a $5 credit, maybe a $50 credit. So it never actually gets reported. And so that is one of the reasons why I will, like, again, relentlessly fight to see real numbers and to see, you know, what, and, you know, yes, they'll show us the taxonomy, but, like, what happens when someone calls and said, I think I was just sexually assaulted by a driver? And what is the back end? What is the script that you have someone read? And the thing that feels a little bit not great to me is that you have these sexual assault advocacy organizations like RAIN and like It's On Us who partner with Lyft. And sometimes it feels like you have these organizations that are allowing Lyft to use them to rehab their brand. And I really struggle with that because I just wish, I'm like, who is truly holding them accountable? It's not Valerie Jarrett because she's sitting on their board and most likely getting paid to be on that board. And, like, good for you, girl, make all your money. But, like, maybe let's just, like, think of a different way to do it. And it doesn't feel like the folks on the Safety Advisory Council at Lyft, which is, like, It's On Us and a couple of other folks and Reliance and others, like, who is doing it? Because right now it feels like I'm on an island of my own. And it is hard sometimes. But yet it's like, we got a report. They haven't agreed to release another one. But I'm grateful that they have a report. Uber is going to release another report at the end of the year. But I just, you know, When you get into a rideshare, there is an assumption of safety. And I never want someone to go through what I went through. And I will never stop talking about it. And I will never stop holding institutions accountable, because I think, particularly as women, as femme-identified folks, as queer folks, particularly for communities of color, again, I am not, I am white. But when you move through the world, we are not safe. And I think that rideshare companies, and particularly Lyft in 2017, when I got into that car, because what was happening is that the Muslim ban had just passed and they were donating $1 million to ACLU. They were doing campaigns of we're your better boyfriend. And to me, it's just the idea of I need you to just be a little bit more honest. I need you to just be a little bit more transparent. And I need you to actually put the people who are being harmed at the center. And that means rideshare sexual assault survivors. And more of us are starting to speak out. More of us are starting to be public. And you cannot put a value on our trauma, but it would be really helpful if you would not just erase what happened to me to a safety incident.
Allison, I have to tell, I'm on the verge of tears. I want you to know that you're not alone, and that so many people are advocating for you. People that you'll never meet, never hear from, are listening to your story and thinking, fuck yes. You know, what can people do to support you? What can people do to make sure that what you just described, that is a change that we're able to create together?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, sometimes people are like, we're going to cancel Lyft. And I'm like, I don't think that's the answer. I appreciate that. But I don't think that's the answer. I think it's, to be honest, the best way to do it is support survivors in your life. The Lyft fight is, is sort of over here and is a bucket of work. But I think truly, genuinely, and honestly is support survivors in your life. And similar to what I had said earlier, in the sense of if you're in a work meeting, if you're, at a sleepover with your friends, if you're on a call, anything, be aware that there is most likely a survivor sitting next to you. Be aware that you are holding space with a survivor. Be aware of the language that you use, and, don't use victim blaming language, and the thing that I always think about is if someone comes to you and shares a story with you, and that is a story of sexual assault, workplace harassment, anything, there is a very likely chance that you might be the first person that they tell. And if you are the first person, how you receive that and hold space for their harm is going to dramatically impact literally the rest of their life and how they choose to heal from that, or tell other people, or seek care. And I think one of the best questions to ask people is both, how can I support you? And is this a feelings moment or a fixing moment? Because sometimes we have a tendency to go into fixing mode. And it's just like, holy shit, a person that I love was just harmed. I want to murder this person. I'm going to go do this thing. I'm going to whatever. We should get you a therapist. We should, do you want to go to this silent retreat? Whatever. And instead of being like, I'm really sorry that happened, how can I support you in this moment? Provide all of the space for that person to just be. And that might be hard, and it might be difficult, and it might bring up shit for you, but that moment is not about you. That moment is about the person who just experienced something horrible and traumatic. And then the next words out of your mouth might be, is this a feeling moment or a fixing moment? Are you looking for me to just listen while you vent and cry and just open yourself up? Or do you want me to problem solve with you? And allow that person to tell you what they need, because that is going to be instrumental. And honestly, that is what people can do for me. Because I think for me, it was, and my mom and I have talked about this before, but the first time that I told my mom about what happened in college, her response was why did you wait so long to tell me? And I was like, thanks, mom. Love you. And that it just wasn't what I needed in that moment. And shout out to Susan, who has really done the work and started seeing a therapist, and it was great. But now it's just the idea of when we hold space for survivors to be like true and authentic and their most three-dimensional selves, instead of being like, well, how much did you drink that night? Well, like you had had sex with him before. I don't know. Mm-mm. Consent is fluid. It must be enthusiastic. It can be withdrawn at any point in time. And I think the other way that folks can support me, and what I mean is like support the world at large, is like read survivor stories. Read survivor stories, listen to survivor podcasts. You know, like Roxane Gay has an incredible anthology called Not That Bad. Reading Chanel Miller's book. You know, there's an incredible podcast from NPR called Believed. And like sitting with that and just really understanding and acknowledging that like there are a plethora of stories. And as I said at the beginning, like there's no repeat experience. No survivor experience is ever going to be the same. And also acknowledging that like it's complicated. The survivor experience is complicated. It is never cut and dry. It is never black and white. And once you allow yourself to just hold space and sit in the muck with someone, and like you are able to see them and to just acknowledge like, this is hard and I am sorry and I'm uncomfortable right now, but I don't need to tell the survivor that. And I'm just going to be here for you. And I'm going to be a safer and supportive space, and anything that I can do for you. And sometimes that might be like, my best friend Morgan and I watch a lot of Grey's Anatomy together. Like all I want to do sometimes is just sit underneath a weighted blanket and watch Grey's Anatomy. And that's it. My best friend Kate and I watch a lot of Real Housewives. Like sometimes I just want to sit and like, you know, drink some wine and do that and whatever. And I think it's just the idea of like, how are you showing up for survivors?
Got a story about an interesting thing in tech or just want to say hi? You can reach us at hello@tangodi.com. You can also find transcripts for today's episode at tangodi.com. There Are No Girls on the Internet was created by me, Bridget Todd. It's a production of iHeartRadio and Unbossed Creative. Jonathan Strickland is our executive producer. Tari Harrison is our producer and sound engineer. Michael Amato is our contributing producer. I'm your host, Bridget Todd. If you want to help us grow, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hey ladies, it's Bridget Todd here. As women, we put our hearts into everything. May is High Blood Pressure Education Month, and it's time to focus on our heart health. Release the Pressure wants to help Black women look at self-care as an act of self-preservation. During High Blood Pressure Education Month, let's help get to our goal of 100,000 Black women putting their hearts first and learn more about their heart health. Visit iHeartRadio.com/RTP for a chance to receive a $1,000 gift card to take care of yourself and prioritize your heart health. That's iHeartRadio.com/RTP. Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at @RailsToTrails.
Looking for hair removal tools that not only deliver smooth results, but also empower you with a sense of complete control? Enter Conair Girl Bomb, your secret weapons for smooth, sleek results made just for women. From the ultimate Girl Bomb grip and professional grade blades, you don't have to compromise and settle for less. Conair Girl Bomb equips you with the precision and power previously reserved for men's grooming tools. So take your hair removal routine to the next level with Conair Girl Bomb. Available at conairgirlbomb.com or a retailer near you.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.